Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce.
Today, I'm joined by Beatrice Dixon, co-founder, chief innovation officer, and CEO of The Honey Pot Company, a plant-derived feminine hygiene powerhouse intent on providing humans with vaginas a healthy feminine care alternative made with powerful and efficacious ingredients. Before founding The Honey Pot Company, Beatrice worked as a pharmacy technician and an employee at Whole Foods, experiences that helped her realize her position within the intersection of science and wellness, where The Honey Pot Company sits today. Honey Pot products are available in tens of thousands of retailers, from Urban Outfitters, Target and Stop and Shop, to Walmart, CVS, and Walgreens. Okay, we're going to get going. I'm so excited. Welcome, Beatrice.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So you had a dream in 2014, and that started everything. And I don't go too deep back into the founder story usually because I'm really looking for brass tacks advice, but your founder story is definitely kind of a cool one. So what were you doing before you had the dream? And what happened in the dream? And then what did you do right after you had the dream?
So we launched the company in 14. Mm-hmm. I had the dream though, like kind of in like late 2011, 2012. Okay. I don't know the exact date, but
right.
Yeah. You know, cause whose memory goes back that far?
Like right.
I don't remember what I did yesterday. but yeah, so I had bacterial vaginosis. I had it for basically almost a year of my life. And within that year, nothing that I did worked. You know, yeah. I tried medicine. I went to the doctor. I went to Google, which is not where you want to go when your coochie's acting up. You know,
yeah.
I went,
it's the worst.
I did every kind of natural remedy that you can think of. Mm-hmm. You know, it was crazy. And so I did that for almost a year. And my grandmother, who transitioned actually when my mother was very young, she died when my mother was 8 years mm-hmm. old. And so, I never met her in this life right. physically, but when she came to me in the dream, she told me that she had been walking with me and seeing me struggle and that she knew what to do to fix it, you know? And, and so she essentially gave me in the dream, we're sitting at a round table, everything's white. And she handed me a piece of paper and she said that, you know, all I needed to do was remember what was on the paper because it would solve my problem. And it was just a list of ingredients.
Right.
It wasn't anything at the moment in particular, like, right? Like my grandmother wasn't like, this is going to be a company that you should
right.
start. Like that wasn't
yeah,
it,
yeah.
you know, she was just like, girl, let me help you get your vagina together.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so the list was very simple. It was coconut oil, apple cider vinegar, rose, lavender, garlic. It was just very, very simple ingredients.
Yep.
And so in the dream, I basically repeated said ingredients for, gosh, it felt like forever. Mm-hmm. It felt like I repeated it hundreds of times.
Right.
And I remember my grandmother telling me to wake up. And so when I woke up, I wrote it down. Mm-hmm. And I essentially went to work because I worked at Whole Foods at the time. And I pulled together these ingredients. And then that, you know, looking at everything that she had told me to get, it essentially showed me that I needed to make myself something. And I made myself what is now our vulva wash. So I made myself a wash with the ingredients that she told me to get. And then I started using it, and within 4 to 5 days of using it, everything went away. It was like magic.
I want to chime in here a little bit.
And
because
so that's how things got started. You know, and the way that the walk away from that was, you know, I felt like I remember the day that I decided that this was what I did now. You know, I was literally going pee. I had smelled myself because my trauma response was so real to what I was going through for almost a year. And I had realized that what she had given me worked.
Mm-hmm.
And so what she had given me worked. And that was the moment that I was like, wow, if this could work for me, this could probably work for other people. And this is what I do now.
Yeah. I mean, I want to chime in for a second because my father passed away, not this past December, but the December before.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, you know, I don't, this is a, you know, this podcast is usually like, how do you, you know, get into a retailer and what's the distribution cost? But I mean, I don't know that until you've had a dream like that,
mm-hmm.
you might be a little bit like, really? But I mean, I had a dream where his hand was on my back and he was telling me something. I'm not going to go into it now, but until you've had something like that happen, it's easy to be a little bit skeptical, I think.
Right.
But once you have had a dream like that happen or been so incredibly blessed to have someone talk to you mm-hmm. like that, mm-hmm. you know that that is 100% real and true and kind of life-changing in a lot of ways, you know? And so I think it's beautiful. And I think it's one thing also for you to decide that you know, that your grandmother helped you heal yourself. I think the next step of deciding now that you're going to now turn this into something for other people, that was a big leap. And so from the minute that you were like, okay, I think this actually belongs in the world, like mm-hmm. How did you even know what to do next? What did you do next?
Well, what I did next is I created my own version of a clinical trial because I knew that it was vulva care, you know,
right.
And, you know, and the way vulvas are set up, there is not one that is like the other. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that I needed to see how other people reacted to what I was making, because if it was going to be a product, then it needs to be consistent.
Right.
You need to know, you need to know what works, what doesn't work, if it's too strong, if it's too light, if it's too, you know, if the essential oils in it are too strong. Like there's so many levels to making skincare, and especially to making vulva care. And
right.
so for like a year, I would make product and I would give it away, you know, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I told people, like, the only thing that I ask is you tell me how it works. Like, how right. do you feel? Does it hurt? Is it too gentle? Does yep. it burn? You know, whatever. Right. Like, and that feedback helped us to create our first kind of line of vulva care products. You know, at that point, we had made one for humans that were pregnant. We had made one for children that was really, 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 really sensitive, because one of the ladies that used, I say lady because this human referred to herself as a lady. So one of the ladies that used the product, she said that every time she would go to wash her baby, every time she would give her child a bath, and I want to say her child was maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years old. I'm thinking more 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. She said every time she would get in the bath, and when she would get to the point to washing the baby's vulva,
yeah,
her baby would always, her child would always cry, because the baby wash that she was using it made her vulva itchy, you know? Because why? Because it's not made for that, right?
Right.
It's not made with the same pH balance of what her vulva vagina was. And so naturally it would make your body itchy, because, you know, whatever you're using on that part of your body, it really has to have the right pH balance. It needs to be the right blend of ingredients. Right. And so she started using the wash that I had given her for her daughter. And it got to the point to where her daughter, when it was bath time, her daughter was excited to wash her vulva. You know, she was like, "Mommy, we need to use this," you know? And so at that time it was like, well, maybe we should make it for that. So we were just ideating and learning, you know?
So you have this group of people, they're giving you feedback. Mm-hmm. You're testing, you're learning, you're tweaking. I mean, and then how does a retailer then, you know, I think this was all in Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, all of this was in Atlanta between 2012 and 2013.
And then, I mean, the retailers started to come knocking, and they haven't stopped knocking since. So,
Well, our retail partners came kind of post 2016.
Okay.
So between 2014 and 2016, we were online. We were doing like festivals, hair shows, and, you know, farmers markets, anywhere we could get in front of hundreds or thousands of people in a matter of a weekend, we were there. Right.
Okay.
You know, we would do like trunk shows. We were just doing anything and everything because we needed to get in front of our customers, you know?
Yeah.
And then,
like, how did you find someone to produce it for you? Were you in a lab yourself?
No, we were making it ourselves, like in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was just being made in the kitchen. We had a space, you know, we had a space and we just made that space into like our own little, kind of lab, you know?
Right.
So we were just thugging it out. You know, it was very like, it was a very, organic grassroots thing, you know? And then that went on kind of from inception to about 2016. 2016 is when Target came. And really between 2015 and 2016, I must have intuited that something was going to happen, you know, because I had started talking to manufacturing facilities by that time and chemists.
Right.
And I didn't know how to do the shit, but I was like, let me just go to the Googles and start talking to these people.
The number one common denominator, I think, of every guest I've had, and I think your guest like 215, is that none of us know how to do any of this shit. And yet somehow we figure it out and we ask questions and we, you know.
And most of all, we fail.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, so
we learn. So we grow and we,
What was that conversation like? That first conversation with Target? Like, what was that Do you remember the conversation? Do you remember the phone call? Like,
yeah, I mean, she had reached out through email.
Yeah.
First of all, like after we had like a million holy shit moments, because that doesn't happen every day.
No,
it happens more now than what it did then, but it wasn't a thing that happened. And she had learned about us through her hairdresser who had met us at a hair show that we were vending
at. I love that.
Random stuff. It was like a 15-minute call, and I remember her just asking me to tell her about the line and what we were doing and what we were passionate about. And, you know, and she kind of ended the call by saying that, you know, what she was going to ask of me and of the brand was almost impossible to do. You know, mm-hmm. When you go into retail, you know, when you're going into like co-ops and, you know, infra stores, like, you know, kind of just natural markets, mm-hmm. You know, even the Whole Foods of the world, even though Whole Foods is a very powerful retailer.
Yep.
It still only has hundreds of doors, right?
Yeah.
When you're talking about the Targets and the Walmarts of the world, they have thousands of doors, right?
Yep.
And so for her, it was like, you are literally like, I think by that time we had made like a $240,000 a year or something like that, which at that moment was a lot of money because we made that shit on our own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We earned that shit. But still, to her, having this conversation, you know, it was still tiny, tiny, teeny, teeny little ant compared to what she was used to dealing with. And so she was just like, look, you know, this would almost be impossible for you. And I told her, I was like, I love impossible. Like I live for impossible. Right. Mm-hmm. And I told, like, I promise you, if you give us this opportunity and this shot, we won't fuck it up. We just won't, you know? And we got the opportunity to go back and meet with, and actually meet her in person. And so at the time that we talked on the phone, all that Honey Pot made was washes, right?
Right.
Was vulva washes. And then we were working with other companies like to wholesale them on our website. So when we went in to meet with Target, we took some of, you know, we basically created prototypes of what a line would look like if we were to get the opportunity. So we had our washes, we took the same branding and we went to like a prototype. I think the prototype of companies called like Rapid Prototype. They're in Bentonville. Cause a lot of people use them before they go into pitch to Walmart. Right.
Yeah.
And so, we took the same branding that we had on our bottles, which is not the branding that you see today.
Right.
And we asked them to make us a pack of pads, like a little line of pads. And then we asked them to make us a line of wipes. Right.
Right.
And so when we went to meet with Mo at the time, with Monique, who was our then buyer, she was like, oh shit, you brought me a brand. You know?
Yeah.
And that cost us a fortune. What felt like a fortune at that time, because it cost a couple thousand dollars. You know what I'm saying? And that's a lot of money when you were as small as we were.
But it was such a great investment. I mean, this is such a good lesson, you know, because there really is a difference between a product and a brand. And I think that, you know, I was just having a conversation with someone about private label. Yep. And, you know, you take Trader Joe's and you take Wegmans and, you know, Kirkland is the largest. Costco's Kirkland brand is the largest consumer packaged good company, I think, in the world. It's bigger than Nike.
Yeah.
Bigger than Nike. And so, you know, for brands, it's a scary time, right? Like, obviously, money is weird. Consumers are, you know, not thrilled. Retailers are having labor issues. And so if you're a retailer, yeah, sure, you lean into private label. But the person on the other side of the argument was like, but you know what? Like, people always love a brand. They
They do.
It flows, it comes and it goes, but people love a brand. And I think what you're, this lesson really is like when you do have an opportunity to go in front of these retailers, because they're always going to be looking for innovation. They're always looking for things to get new people into their stores. If you show up with a product that's great, that's one thing. If you show up like you did with a pipeline, this is how we're going to grow. This is what it's going to look like. This is what, imagine what a whole set could be of ours, or a whole end cap could look like. Right. You know, that's such a, it's such a great way to go into the meeting. What was the kind of guiding principle when it came to that innovation? Like, you wanted to own sexual wellness, you wanted to own, you know, what did you want to own, I guess?
At that time, I just wanted to be the first brand that crossed the aisle, right? At that time, there had been no other brand that had crossed, right? It was like, at that time, if you made washes and wipes, that's what you did. If you made tampons, that's what you did. If you made pads, that's what you did. And to be honest, it still is kind of sort of like that. But once we realized who and what we were, which is why we were iterating in the beginning for the first few years, once we realized what we were, which is the vagina company, you know, and now we're turning into the personal care brand, right? It's not just based on vaginas and vulvas. It's looking at the whole thing. But that was always the plan from this moment that we're talking about, right? But at that moment, I was gradually like focused on, okay, there has never been a company that has made washes, wipes, and pads, right? Mm-hmm. And then that went from, there's never been a company that's made washes, wipes, pads, tampons. And then it was like, there's never been a company that made washes, wipes, pads, tampons, treatment, right?
It's like that, I'm going on a picnic.
Yeah. Because my thing was and still is, when you think of all of the brands that sit on the shelf that are synonymous, right? Which, thank God for these brands, because they make a reason for us to be.
Yeah.
Right. I never talk about these brands as competitors. I think about them as partners on the shelf, even though, you know, we are competitors technically, but you know what I'm saying? I don't think of them in a negative light, whether they're natural, conventional, private label, it doesn't matter. Those products are on the shelf for somebody, right? Somebody may need that particular product because that particular product works for them, and people should have what works, right?
Yep.
And natural for some people doesn't always fucking work. So like, right? And so, but what I wanted to do was think of, when you think of Honey Pot, you want to think of us as a brand that We like to look at the biggest markets. We like to look, up until this moment, who are the biggest names in the business, and how do we create better for you options of those types of products?
Right.
Yep. Because those market sizes are huge, and we need huge market sizes in order for us, especially when you're growing. You need huge market sizes, and you need to reach a lot of people in order for it to make sense for you to go to a manufacturer, to have internal chemists, and to have, you know, which this takes a long time to do. You know, in the beginning, you're just working with your manufacturer, right? And then and you're developing your formulation with them, or you're working with a chemist, and then you take that to a manufacturer. You know, but whatever way that you skin that cat, that shit is expensive.
Right.
Right.
No, I mean, there were like 8 lessons in that one little like 2-minute thing that you just said. I'm like writing fiercely, and I'm writing like shorthand notes to myself, so I'm not even sure I'm going to be able to read them.
That's hilarious.
But we are going to take a little break, and then when we come back, I'm going to go back in and like go deep into a couple of the things that you just said. So we're going to be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
I'm back with Bea Dixon from the Honey Pot Company. Okay, so before the break, you said a bunch of just such important things that I want to get into them a little bit more. But the thing that kind of really sparked in my head as you were talking, because I'm picturing you in this Target meeting with this innovation pipeline, and all of a sudden it's like you went from making this thing that was going to solve people's problems into there's a massive market out there for a massive brand that is synonymous with something for consumers. And all of a sudden it's like everything kind of exploded a little bit, you know, in terms of the potential and the opportunity and what was ahead of you. And I know people in that position right now, and that is amazing because it's amazing, but it's also a little scary for some because now all of a sudden your brand has to be a little bit more mature and you have to be a little bit more technical about what you're offering. And sales are, to your point, very, very expensive, even if they give you a free end cap every now and then. So, you know, do you remember the you talked about iterating those first few years. Do you remember growing into yourself? Do you remember that those feelings of growing pains, both from making the product, but also just the brand identity and, you know, these sort of like, it's almost like that awkward teenage phase or even like preteen phase, you know, like your arms, you can see what it's going to look like when you're tall, but you don't know quite how you're going to get there. Do you remember that phase and the feelings and some stuff that went along with it?
I mean, look, we're still growing.
Yeah.
Right? Like I think that people tend to think that just because you've reached a certain level of scale,
yeah,
that you all of a sudden become an expert and know everything.
Right.
And, you know, and like, that's just not how the shit works.
Yep.
Every level of growth that you have, you are growing into yourself.
Yep.
Right. We have always been chasing after our growth because we've always grown very, very fast, even now.
Right.
And so, yes, like I remember what it felt like. I remember what the hunger felt like to just want to get on and prove the concept. I remember what the feeling felt like, and very grateful to remember and also still be feeling like, cause I'm still hungry, you know, like I need food. You know what I mean?
Right.
I met Melody Hobson and she told me that shit and it fucking blew my mind. Cause I'm like, yeah. Like I am still hungry, like I need food, like I don't have any, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but like, yeah, like I feel like we live in that space of focus and drive and determination and, you know, and those moments, I may have felt it more intensely than the way that I do now.
Right.
You know, but like, it's really important to continue to lean into that feeling. I think now the difference is I'm not so emotionally attached
mm-hmm.
to things that I was then. Right.
Right.
Like now
because a lot of the retailers now are doing a program called Simplify to Amplify. It's not just one, it's all of them.
Right.
Because the world is changing, economics are changing. All kinds of shit is changing right now, right?
Right.
And with the thing that will constantly be, along with death and taxes, is change.
Yep.
Right. So I remember back in the day, if we were having a conversation about changes or discontinuing certain product lines, or I would feel it in my gut.
Yep.
You know, because it was like all of these product lines, all of these different types of products and innovation, they were like my kids.
Yeah. You know? I feel it. I mean,
yeah, but
yeah,
the place that I live in now, they are not my children. They are products, right? They are products that are meant to serve humanity. But the thing that you have to pay attention to is are enough people enjoying those products, or do enough people know about those products,
right,
or do enough people need those products, right?
Yep.
And you have to let the products and the market and the retailers and the humans, most importantly, tell you what it needs.
Yeah.
And so if it doesn't need something, then you have to die to the emotion of it and be committed to what is going to be able to further the brand and help to get the company into as many hands as possible.
Yeah.
Right. And that comes with building out your core, the things that are the things that people need and use consistently back to back. Right.
Right.
And so, you know, so yeah, like I remember the growing pains. I remember what it felt like to be emotional when we were having these conversations about things that needed to come off the shelf and go on the shelf and all the things. And I'm grateful that now I'm in a place. And this is, by the way, that emotional feeling was just like last year. Like I am just now getting to the place where I can have this conversation and be in agreement. If something isn't working to the level that it needs to work in order for it to be able to, because manufacturing is expensive.
Right. So you don't want to be making something that isn't going, because it ends up costing you to try to keep it there. Yep.
And not, it costs us to keep it there. It costs in money, and it costs in time and energy.
Yep.
Right. And your team only has so much. There's only so many resources and so many things that each team can do at any one given time. And if something isn't giving us the result in money and margin and profit that it needs to give us, then that shit has to go, right? That's just the way that it is. This is a business. This isn't, we're not doing this for fun, right?
Right.
And so, and you know, because it ends up taxing and killing your team. And that is not what we're here to do. None of these people are robots. They're human beings, right? Yep. And they can't be, you can't be working for something that's not working as good as another thing. Right. And you just have to pay attention to that. And so, you know, it's just becoming, you know, it's just growing up in your business and, you know, and then.
I think what gets me, you know, I am still too close to it. I know that they're not my children. And I also know that I'm not a delusional founder. Like I'm not one of those people who thinks that, you know, everyone in the world needs this thing. But I do know when I've made something delicious that will make people's lives enhanced.
Absolutely.
And I think that what gets me frustrated isn't, if the velocity isn't there, the velocity isn't there and I'm okay.
Right.
Gets me is when a buyer, like, and I love our buyers, I love our retail partners, but like, because when you're in the wholesale business and you're not selling directly to consumers 99% of the time, there's this like person in between. And sometimes I'm like, no, just trust me. Like the people will like it. Like just, you know,
sometimes it takes time.
I get this feeling of like, don't stop it from reaching.
Yeah.
The people, you know?
Right. Because things take time.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm with you on that, sister. Like I'm completely with you on that.
Yeah.
And sometimes things have been on, sometimes you're having these conversations multiple times. And I think we have to understand that our retail partners and our retail buyers, they have people to answer to.
Yep.
And they have the same way we're tracking our sales and yep. tracking velocity and tracking all the things. They're tracking all the things. And in an environment, in an economic environment like this,
yep.
You know, things have to change. And I don't think that these things last forever.
Right.
I think that there's periods of these things where there's going to be moments where they want to simplify. There's going to be moments where they want to innovate. There's going to be,
yep.
and you just have to be, you have to be neutral. And you have yeah. to go with the flow because
yeah, you're going to lose your mind. If
you're
you going
to lose, you're going to lose your mind. And you also have to partner with these retailers, and these retailers are businesses and
right.
they have to operate that way. They're a lot of them are publicly traded companies, so they can't mm-hmm. be out here dilly dallying like shit doesn't matter.
Right.
Right. And I just believe that we as their partners have to align to that truth. Right.
Yep.
Because we all have people to answer to. We all have things that we have to do, you know.
Yep.
And so it's better to not be emotional about it and better to just yep. go with the flow, because it may be just like this. If you're a good partner to that retailer and you have provided them a lot of growth within their company. Right. And you've provided them with a lot of innovation. Guess what? They're going to trust you. Just
mm-hmm.
because it's not working now doesn't mean that it can't work in the future.
Right.
And just because it's not working now and you may have to stop doing this thing, it doesn't mean that it stops your business. You still the
right.
goal is to still have so many different other products.
Right.
Within the portfolio that are working for the portfolio at any given time. Right. So like it's going to be all right. You know?
Yeah. No, I think that's really good advice. I think especially for right now, because you know, there's definitely some
yeah,
existential.
Right now.
Yeah. So I want to switch over to, you know, one of the things you've done, you know, and I feel like I have a nose for these things, and you know, everyone talks this, well, maybe not as much in 2023, but for like 4 years there, it was like, our community, we're building a community. It's not a business. It's a community. They're not followers. It's a community. And I was always like, eh, really? But you really have. You've really mm-hmm. built a community around, I mean, starting with, you know, giving it out to people and really getting the feedback. Mm-hmm. You've offered your community support and help around a lot of things, you know, mental, physical. You know, going back to the idea of what Honey Pot could be, you know, when did it start? When did you start really like codifying what you wanted to be in people's lives? And how did you start building that out, I guess?
From the moment we created this beautiful spirit and soul of a business called Honey Pot. From
yeah.
from the fucking millisecond that it was created mm. to enhance people's lives. It was created to help people understand that there's no need for shame. There's no need for guilt.
Okay.
There's no need for you to feel, there's no need for stigma. There's no need
yep.
for these things when half the planet has a vagina. Everyone
yep.
on the planet, it took a penis and vagina for us to get here.
Right.
And, you know, 7 times out of 10, you came out of a vagina, right? Like,
yes.
like nothing should be weird
right.
when you're talking about that's how humans come onto the planet, right?
Right.
like, it's weird that is weird, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, and shame and guilt and stigma
actually can create shit in your body.
Yeah.
And create things that happen, mm-hmm. right? And it will make for you finding out about something that you have going on with your body. Those things do not make it better. They make it worse. Yeah. You know, and even getting off of for coming from that point of view, coming from another point of view, you know, humans that have vaginas, we nurture, we, you yeah. know, we go through a lot in our lifetimes. We bleed. We, you know, at some point you're going to have a baby. Maybe you won't, but you'll, even if you don't, you're probably going to go through menopause, right? Like mm-hmm. so many things happen, you know, maybe there was sexual trauma, like maybe,
yeah.
right? Like, and that happens to more people than it doesn't, right? Like, yep. you know, there's so many things that happen around the vagina and the vulva and our sexual organs. And to me, companies that are in this type of business, it should be to bring people together. Because to me, right. whatever the core of the business is for kind of the body part or body parts mm-hmm. that you're serving, it's really important to align to what that is, because that is the energy that's going to go out. And that's a very esoteric yep. way to look at business, but that's just who.
I love it. I mean, I guess one of my questions is, you know, I'll talk about us for a second in the context of that, because, you know, I made these sauces not to make a sauce product, but because I've been teaching cooking for 25 years.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of dread around people cooking, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it feels like a burden. It feels like there is a lot of shame, because especially women feel like they are supposed to somehow intuitively know how to roast a chicken and make right. a pot of rice. And most haven't been taught. So on top of not knowing how to do something and feeling incompetent, there's a shame of not feeling competent, which yeah. is absurd, because
it's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. And so for us, the company was always, it's not just about the product. It's about how do I hold a knife and how do I make a shopping list? And, you know, how do I not have to clean up 85 pots when people eat it in 4 seconds and I hate them yep. and I want to run away from my life. So I get it. I will say, and this is the question I have for you, that our early community of people, especially that came to us very invested in our sauces because they were at our cooking school and they were taking our classes and they were part of trying them and sampling them and making the company, I don't think that they resent the growth, but I think that they feel perhaps a little bit left behind mm-hmm. or they see us now and they think, oh, well, now they're in, you know, now they're in like all these stores. So they're not as authentic anymore, or they're not ours anymore. Mm-hmm. And there's like a, do you know what I mean? A yeah. little bit?
Yeah, 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 yeah. I definitely know what you mean.
So how do you manage when you build with a community, you're also more vulnerable to the whims of that community and to the feelings of that community, but you do want to scale and you do want to reach more people and you do want to give this to a broader audience. So how do you keep them feeling okay about it?
I think you have to remain true to who you are at all times
mm-hmm.
And do that with the best of your ability, and also understand that you're not in control, okay. right? You know, we serve human beings.
Right.
We don't call them consumers. We don't say women and she and her and all the things. We try to be very conscientious with how we speak to the humans that we serve, because not all of those right. humans go by those pronouns, and not all of those humans.
We're
right? right. So like we work very hard while growing, which is also extremely hard to stay true to what our reason to be is. We make education education is really the main product that we serve, and then we just so happen to make all these really beautiful, efficacious, clinically tested skincare and vulva care products, right? Like, but not but, and it's really important that we stick to that, because we have definitely fallen victim to that type of energy, right? But the thing is that when you make something that's good and that actually coming from a place of wanting to actually be the change in the world that you live in, and coming from a place that you actually want to put really beautiful products on the shelf and make them openly available to as many people as possible. I think when that type of energy comes into the conversation, you also have to be willing to talk to that energy to let them know that, like, this is for everybody.
Yeah.
Right. And everybody should want us to be successful. Because we're in a very committed relationship to the humans that we serve. Mm-hmm. Even if they didn't buy a product, even if they just read a something on social media, right. And had something positive to say or had something negative to say, we are in a very deeply devoted, connected relationship with the people that we serve, right? Yep. And in relationships, there's going to be ebbs and flows. In relationships, there's going to be miscommunications. In relationships, things are going to be great, and sometimes things aren't going to be great, right? But I think you have to remain true to the fact that you are, in fact, in a relationship with your customers.
Yeah.
Right?
No, because that's beautiful.
Because without them, there is no us.
Right.
Without these human beings taking their hard-earned fucking money and going into these stores and buying our products or going onto our website and being committed to paying the price and paying the shipping and getting in their car and using up gas. And you understand what I'm saying? So many things have to happen in order for a human to buy a product that we make. We have to be good to them. We have to be loyal to them. We have to be kind to them. We have to respect how they feel. When we get into moments where it's a hard time in the relationship and they're questioning our loyalty and all the things and feeling left behind, we have to see those things. We have to hear them, and we have to make them know and let them know that how they feel is valid. Even if it's not true, how they feel is valid.
Right.
And
if you're moving forward, I mean, I think this is such a good, it's such a good analogy, right? Because I heard something once, my therapist actually told me, like, when my fiance and I get into a fight, it's not to, middle-aged people having an argument, it's to 11-year-olds sitting in their trauma, fighting.
Doing their best.
And feeling overwhelmed because, I feel abandoned, and he goes to, I feel overwhelmed and I don't know how to help you.
Exactly.
And so looking at it through that context is like, okay, that makes everything okay, because you feel this way about how I responded to something. I'm not going to automatically acquiesce and say, you're right, you're right. I'm so sorry, you're right. I'm going to say, okay, I can totally see how you would feel that way. Mm-hmm. And this is perhaps what's happening in my world. And I think similarly, what you're saying is when brands trip over themselves to try to be, you can smell it. Again, you can sense the false apology. You can sense the false responsibility and accountability and crisis management people crafting the sentences. Like, when it's real, it
communicates.
It communicates, yeah.
Because Allie, everything communicates.
Right. whether you realize it or not.
That's one of the illest quotes that I have ever heard. Shout out. Seriously, Mr. Alexander Cummings. I was at a retreat with him a few years ago.
That's a good one. And
one of the things somebody asked about, like, you know, what is advice that you can give us as founders, yada, yada, yada. And he was like, the main piece of advice, and this is a man who doesn't say much, but when he opens up his fucking mouth to say something, he says something.
Everything can, and
at the end of the day, you have to understand that everything communicates. Yeah. Every single thing. What you say, what you don't say, what your eyes say, what your products say, how you make them, how you serve them. Yep. When you make a mistake, how do you respond? Like, yep. It's better just to be authentic. It's better just to be honest. It's better just to be like, yo, I made a mistake. That was my bad. It's better to just be like, you know what, y'all, I feel what you're saying, but like, this is a business and we have to grow.
Right. Right?
Like there are.
And does everyone on your team at this point have, is that just like integral in the onboarding? Like This is, just, it's like pounded in relentless, you know, culture. This is who we are.
Yeah. I mean, we do our best to do that, but also like we're growing, right? Like, like you do your best to serve as many people as you can and you're still going to fall short. And I think that you just have to be okay with that shit.
Yeah.
You know, because we're all just people trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that is the energy like that. Like, I think as long as we can stick to that, then we're going to be all right. We can get through anything, you know, but like you can't treat people the way that you, in a different way than what you want to be treated. And you have to understand that we're people just trying to figure this shit out. And what is for sure going to happen is somebody's going to make a mistake.
Yeah.
Right. And we're not the first ones to.
Death, taxes, change, and mistakes. Yeah.
Exactly. Like it's there's no way around it, but I think the thing that's most important is to give grace and hope that people can give you grace in return. And some people aren't gonna. Some people are just gonna be in their bag and be like, no, fuck that. I'm not using this anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't like you. I don't want you. And guess what? That is their right to feel that way.
Yep. Right? I mean, we were at about the time, but I just want to say, when I sent my team the article that you all were giving out free products during Beyonce's tour in the bathroom, I thought like everyone basically just went around the room gobsmacked, thinking like, what a genius frickin' way to go. Like, it aligns so perfectly with who the company is, the products, the way that you did it. You know, I don't even know, you know, I would imagine there were tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people just, you know, going to these cashless vending machines. I don't even know how many emails you got from the QR code scans. I don't even think it matters. But you were so, it wasn't like, ooh, that's such a genius marketing move. It was more like, this is so aligned and it feels so right that it has to work. It was like perfect flow. So well done.
Thank you.
Well done. All right. I mean, this has been an amazing hour. I feel like I also had a little bit of a therapy session. So I thank you for that, B. And, you know, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I know that it isn't easy. And we didn't even cover that you don't have a laptop, but maybe we'll do a part two. and we'll do it then.
That is funny. Yeah, I don't use those anymore.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I really am grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. And Armin, thank you for engineering the show. Listeners, thank you. I did have like a hiatus because the network had a very well-deserved vacation, but I didn't let anyone know that like I wasn't coming back next week. But now I am coming back next week with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.